Welcome to the Upward Spiral, a music business podcast presented by Hypebot.com. Today on the podcast, we are talking with Dan Cantor, who's the former CEO and co-founder of XFM, a social music discovery platform that enables people to transform music blogs into a playable mix. In recent months, his company was acquired by Rhapsody International, and he became their VP of product. Now Dan is leading the charge into the crowded music streaming space. We are going to talk to him about his company, the music startup sector, and Rhapsody's future. I am Kyle Belin, a user experience researcher and music technology writer.
And I'm Courtney Harding. I run media strategy for Mazooka, a music startup.
As I said at the top of the show, we are joined by Dan Cantor. Say hello, Dan.
Hey, everybody.
So in March of 2010, XFM started as Extension FM with a Chrome plugin that allowed users to create a playlist out of songs posted on a blog's website. In the following years, the product evolved and grew to include a web app, a mobile app, and a music player. Talk about where you started with XFM and why, and how it changed as you learned from the market.
Sure. So as you mentioned, when we originally started, I guess way back in December of 2009, January of 2010, we started as a Chrome extension. And it was really just a project at that point. It was really the idea that, hey, Chrome was new, extensions were just came out, and this allowed us to do some things that I think we'd always wanted to do, but hadn't been able to do in the past with music on the web. So the initial idea was you install this extension and it just makes playback of music on blogs or other various sites like SoundCloud, just makes it really easy. In addition to making it easy, it helps you collect that music. So as you sort of browse and you listen to things you like, it allowed you to sort of build up a library of these links to these songs that you could then later play back. After doing that, after sort of putting it out there and getting a warm reception, just sort of built from there, where all of a sudden started working with my two co-founders, Marshall Jones and Charles Smith. And, just kept growing and people kept really being excited about it. And, sort of before long, we were talking to investors and the company grew out of it. Really just was a project after my time at AOL Music, where I just said, hey, I'm looking to do something small and fun. And before I knew it, it was something bigger than that.
I remember, back in 2011, I interviewed Charles Smith, who's your former co-founder and COO at the company. We talked about the sort of different stakeholders that are involved in a product like that, where with the web app and the mobile app, you're obviously trying to target, passionate music blog readers. With the music player, you're trying to target blogs themselves and have them use your music player as the go-to way that fans play the music on the website. And the back end, you also have the data that you're trying to see if record labels have an interest in. Can you talk about the kind of different products that you thought about in trying to engage those different users and the opportunities that presented themselves or didn't along the way?
That's absolutely right. So we were a Chrome extension for the first 9 or 10 months. And most, I'd say the mainstream is not really installing extensions. And what we found was after we got to a certain number, people just didn't know what extensions were, but it went beyond that. People also didn't know why they should use our extension and where they should be going for music. So at the start, we had people that were hardcore music fans and hardcore, web geeks, and they were installing the extension, going to their favorite music blogs, and this was making it incredible for them. It was giving them playback and collection and all the things they've always wanted off of those music blogs. But what happened was when we reached a certain point, we said, you know what? We've got all of these music, all of this data now. We've got all of these links to songs. We've got all of this, this great commentary. And, you know, we've collected that into our, you know, sort of central database. What if we now sort of started to build an experience on top of that that was a little bit more mainstream, was a little bit more, I'll say, familiar in how you would browse that music, how you discover it, how you'd search on top of it. If we built a website that, you know, as a destination that people can go to that have no idea what an extension or a music blog is, but yet they're able to find this music, then, you know, then we believe we have something. So we started working on that, I'd say about 9 months in, and I believe we launched it the first half of 2011. And then, you know, from there, we saw some really nice growth to sort of that next phase.
Yeah, so I'm curious about the response to the data that the labels had, because I've talked to a lot of labels more recently, and they seem to be interested in getting more data, but I feel like they don't quite know what data it is they're looking for and how to quite go about interacting with it. So can you talk a little bit more about that experience?
Sure. So we felt, and I'll actually to that point where we were talking to labels and selling data or at least sharing data with them. But the plan was that we're collecting data that is so new about artists that are so new in music that is, you know, literally just put out there directly by the artists. And, you know, we got this. We can sort of see what's popular. We can see bloggers are blogging about who that sort of first layer of music geeks are listening to, who they're sharing it out to. And then when, you know, by the time it gets to the website, it gets to Facebook and Twitter, what that next level of audience is checking out. So we always felt like we had something there. And, you know, I mean, have something. We really, you know, we saw artists sort of be, you know, get big on our platform, and then 6-12 months later, all of a sudden, they were pretty big on iTunes or something like that. So we did have that early data. We never got to the point where we were sharing it or had any type of relationship with the labels, though.
So why do you think that is? I mean, was that just like you guys didn't decide to pursue the data, or was it because the labels weren't interested? Or, like, I mean, it sounded like what you were collecting to me was, anyway, was really valuable. So why did it not really work out?
I mean, we didn't approach them at all. I think that was more function of tiny company and, you know, sort of prioritizing the product and user growth over, those sort of conversations. You know, at that point, we were very interested in growing our user base, and we had a we had the website, and we were working on our iPhone and Android apps at the time.
Got it.
So it's something that, I think it's something we could have gotten to, but yeah, I mean, just small team didn't get there.
Okay. So just sort of flash forward a little bit. You know, you ran this company for a while. It was clearly, you guys were doing a lot. You had a lot going on. And then in December 2013, you wrote this really great blog post about the challenges of running a music startup and why it no longer made sense for you to keep running XFM as a website and a suite of apps. You know, how long did you sort of think about that blog post? How long did you work on that blog post? And why did it become time to write that? Because it sounded like you guys were doing pretty well.
Yeah, so I mean, great question. I think we were thinking about it for many months. It was very difficult to write that, and basically what it came down to was this: we were growing, but very slowly. At that point about 600,000 active monthlies, which is a really nice number. But unfortunately, is not large enough to really monetize, from an advertising or from an in-app purchase or, you know, any sort of way you look at it. 600,000 actives is not really that large of a number that you could monetize. And when you also start to look at the other music sites that are out there, the music space is incredibly competitive, incredibly full of amazing sites from very small to very large. I mean, all the largest players are in it now. And we sort of looked at it and we said, hey, you know, you can take a startup that maybe has 2, 3, 4 million actives that's ahead of us, and they're so far away from making any real money or, you know, having sort of any decent future. And we just started looking at that and said, you know what, we can go back to our investors who were absolutely awesome and would have probably supported us forever, and we could have asked them for another year worth of money and they would have given it to us. And we just felt like, you know, in a year from that, at that point, we would have maybe we'd get to 1 million users. But what would that do? Would it really change the landscape for us? We didn't feel that way. So, you know, we made the really tough decision. We'd been working on this thing for many years. It was our baby, but it was a move on. And even at that point, and I think you saw this over the next 6 months, letting go was really difficult. And I think when we made the announcement, we weren't even shutting down fully. We were going to sort of the extension into a different type of thing that actually integrated with a bunch of the larger services like Rhapsody and Spotify and RDO and SoundCloud and really, sort of see if there was a place there. Almost going back to our roots as this extension, maybe for the hardcore music fans that, maybe we can fit in that space. And it was less at that point about, hey, now, okay, how do we get to that point where we're making great money, or it was more of just let's sort of bow out and have something that doesn't cost anything but is still providing value to people. So that's where we kind of landed in December. And then the next 6 months after that, that was kind of a very interesting ride as well.
Yeah, I mean, in those coming months, your team did stay quiet about XFM's future. And then at the beginning of August, you announced that XFM had been acquired by Rhapsody International. Can you talk a little more about that time period between December when you wrote the blog post and August when you got acquired, and then the sort of acquisition talks overall? What kind of thoughts were you having, and what were some of the other conversations that you're having with folks at that time?
Yeah, so we a little bit before we wrote the blog post, we reached out. We had some relationships with some larger companies, and we talked a little bit. Rhapsody was not one that we talked to, just because we didn't know anyone there. But we talked to a few companies here and there. You know, I think we talked to Google. We probably talked to Spotify, and I don't think we knew what we wanted just yet. We weren't sure if strategic investment could have worked, or if some integration with the product, or maybe a white label of the product. I mean, we sort of talked a bunch of things, and nothing really materialized. And then we wrote this blog post. And once we wrote the blog post and we sort of, put everything out on the table, well, then it got interesting because a few players did reach out to us, Rhapsody being one of them. And, I don't want to – this may come off sounding, a little ridiculous, but within the first conversation with Rhapsody, it was pretty obvious that we would be a really good fit here. And, they the things that they had said around sort of our approach to integrating with the web at large and music and content, all of that stuff, and that's where their interests were lying, then, all of a sudden it became like, wow, I can't believe these guys are even thinking about that. And then the more and more we thought it was, these guys have been doing this for 10 years. They've got incredible technology. They've got 30 million licensed songs, which anyone will tell you that works at a music startup, that's sort of the dream to have a catalog to play with and do incredibly interesting things on top of. So we started talking to them in December, and It was one of those things where it was okay, we can move fast, and let's all do this, and this sounds really interesting. But I think once that process starts and you really get into it, and the lawyers start talking, and terms go back and forth, well, it kind of goes on a bit longer than anyone would like. So for the first few months, we kept the website going, we kept the apps up, and I think we made that announcement in January when we were originally going to sort of our cutoff date, that hey, we're going to be up for the time being, and we're not shutting down, and we couldn't really speak more about it. We couldn't say, hey, here's why, because Rapsy's interested and we're talking, but I think we alluded to, hey, and we're kind of hopeful that something good will happen here. So we kept it running for a few more months, but then sort of as the talks kept progressing, it sort of became, well, hey, we're running out of money, we can't keep this running, and what are our real intentions with the web, with XFM, the site, not the technology or anything, but what are our intentions with the site post acquisition? And we knew we were going to have to shut it down in its current form, so we made that decision that said, okay, we're going to have to shut it down now, and the deal is not closed. We can't announce anything, but we've got to shut it down. And again, we tried to say something great is coming. We're feeling optimistic here. Say anything more that hurt us. And I think a lot of our users and fans out there, were sort of like, hey, what are these guys doing? What's going on here? Those 6 months up until we announced everything was pretty stressful. It was pretty stressful for everybody involved, both on my team, but on the Rap City side as well. Because those guys wanted to get it done quickly. We were really excited. They were really excited to bring us on. And it's just that process. It's just the terms get thrown back and forth, and it really just kind of takes longer than everyone wants.
Yeah, because I imagine people had, once they saw that you were shutting down the site. I imagine a lot of people thought, oh, well, that's another one in the Deadpool. And, yeah, they say something great is coming, but, come on. They're just saying that to be nice. And I feel like, over the course of this year, and I feel like especially this summer, there have been a lot of music startups going in the Deadpool or being acquired or acqui-hired. What's your take on that? Like, it's been... first of all, there was a whole trend of like Rapsody acquisitions to the point where I joked about Rapsody acqui-hiring my dog because it seemed like they were going out just hoovering stuff up. And then you look at, Songza and Google and, obviously Apple and Beats and everything that's happened since then. And, what's your take on all these sort of, startups that are kind of like either disappearing or at least morphing?
Sure. So the great consolidation has begun. I don't think I coined that phrase. I think I heard it a year ago. But that's what I think a lot of people are coming, a lot of companies, small companies, startups are coming to the realization that we came to. And I'm just talking about the music space here, that it is very, very competitive. And it's competitive like... I'll almost say like no other industry, and granted, I've only really studied and been in this industry, but you've got small players all the way down to single developers putting out apps on the App Store that are just free downloads, free music. You've got small FM, and there's a ton of those that have raised a little bit of money. They're doing some interesting stuff. They haven't gotten to scale, but they're there. Then you've got another tier above that. You've got the, I'll even say the Rapsodies, the Spotify's, these are startups or companies that have been around for 5 to 10 years, but are not, say the giants. But then you've got the giants. I mean, Apple, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, even Samsung. I mean, the space is littered from bottom to the top with everybody that's due there, and everybody's motivation is different. You've got the single developer that's just interested in putting out an app for 99 cents. You've got a single developer that's putting out free stuff for free, and that's and they're not interested in money. You've got You've got companies like, like Rhapsody and like a Spotify, like an RDO that are absolutely, trying to turn a profit here and make something of this. And then you've got guys like Google and Apple that, Apple famously is all about selling their hardware and, the music and media, the content sells their hardware, and Google is all about, selling ads or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of another space where you have this level.
You're competing against all of that.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm trying to think, like I said, I was trying to think of another space where, you have this sort of diversity, because especially in the entertainment space, right? Like TV, you've got your big guys and nothing else. Movies, you've got big guys and nothing else. I mean, you have...
What about messaging and photos?
Messaging and photos is interesting because that I feel like you do have a diversity of startups. But I definitely feel like outside of that, like just in the, films, TV, books, like those three, you don't see that. But for some reason in music, you like, I don't know that anyone would ever really try to start like a Netflix competitor just for fun. Right? Like, you'd be crazy to do that. But there are plenty of people out there who are trying to start things that compete on some level with SoundCloud, like in their basements, like at hack days. And I just sort of wonder why music has that openness, whereas, no one is going to start like a TV app to share TV shows.
Well, but I think you're hinting at a little bit of the thing, though, is that they don't know yet if they get big enough that all of a sudden there'll be lawsuits everywhere.
Yeah,
right. If their product is actually touching music and actually has some traction behind it, and Dan, I think you alluded to this in your blog post, all of a sudden the labels will get very interested in you and start asking for money very quickly. I mean, am I right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we felt like we had a ceiling on top of us that we would never be able to break through with the current the way that we were going about things. Look, I would have loved to have gotten to the point where we were big enough that that got interesting. But at the same time, if you look across look back in history of the companies that were doing stuff similar to us, and again, I could get into why we believe we were different and positioned ourselves different legally. But if you look at the Groove Sharks and the iMemes and basically any unlicensed music player, anytime they got to a certain point, they were sued. And that's, that's really scary. And I think that we always felt like we were doing the right thing. We were linking to music. We were not downloading or caching. We were DMCA compliant. We removed those links immediately. We did things differently than, the other companies I just mentioned. However, that doesn't matter when you're sued. If you're sued and you're a tiny startup, it doesn't matter how things go, if you win or lose, because that battle is going to take a long time, a lot of money, and no matter what, you're going to come out, you're not going to come out of it. So, at some point we felt like, again, we felt like even if we got from 600,000 to a million, it wouldn't have been much. But if we got to 10 million, well, then what? Then do we have good things, awaiting us or not? And look, I would have loved to have done it. I'm not going to sit here and say I wouldn't have, but it would have been very interesting to get to that point. Maybe we would have figured something out at that point and, sort of been able to license stuff. But, I think to an extent, the heart of what XFM was not about licensed content. It was about this new stuff that sort of was unavailable in these other places. So it was, it's a very difficult space. And I'll just mention that, even the guys that have sort of broken out, like the Spotify's and the Pandora's, they're not profitable. I mean, that's the scariest part of it, that Pandora is a public company and I think they've had one profitable quarter in their entire lives. And, maybe they can, I'm sure if they wanted to, they can become profitable, but we're not talking about, hand over fist, internet, web company type money here. We're talking about, maybe they can be a little bit profitable. And so it's a scary space, and I say all of this with the huge, caveat or the sort of excitement that I'm still doing. You know, and I must be crazy, but I'm here at Rhapsody, and I actually think, you know, since I've been in here for a few months now, like, well, there are some really interesting things that people haven't tried yet, you know? So I'm still an optimist on the space. I just think that it's, you know, things are going to have to change a bit from how they currently are. And I guess the good news is that things have been changing, you know, for the positive over the last 10 years, right? So, you know, maybe it's going to take a little bit more time, but, you know, I'm sort of convinced we're going to get there.
Yeah, it seems like right now, in 5 or 10 years, we're going to look back on what was happening now, I hope, and see that this was a very sort of weird, unstable time when stuff was getting worked out, because you are, as a music startup, incentivized to stay small. Right, like the way to put it, because yeah, the labels, the publishers, whomever will let you, you know, have fun and play as long as you don't get too big. And once they sense that you're getting big and getting money, then deals are done where it basically becomes impossible for you to ever really be profitable. And I think a lot of people at that point probably bail, and a lot of investors bail, obviously, in the case of Spotify and Pandora, not all of them do, but. You know, if I was an investor, I could look at music, or I could look at any number of other markets where it's clear that I'm going to, you know, make a much better return on my investment. And why would I go with music? Although it's cool and fun, you get to meet famous people and all that. So I just feel like at some point something has to give, or something has to just shift. Like, I almost feel like streaming music, when we look back from, you know, 50 years from now, is going to be like the 8 tracks. Not 8 tracks the site, but 8 tracks the actual, like, physical product of music formats, because, you know, it just, like, something's not quite working. Like, 8 tracks never quite worked on some level. And, like, I feel like streaming as it in its current form is just, something's not quite there. And I feel like it's the step after streaming, whatever that step is, that's going to get there. But I feel like right now we're in the stage where it's just like, it's not, it's getting there. You kind of see it, but it's not there yet.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. You know, it's funny because we've been talking about it from the, you know, side of it. And I will say, from the consumer side and the user side, and, you know, I'll raise my hand and say I'm, you know, the biggest music lovers, you know, there is. I mean, I love listening to music. From that side, it couldn't be a better time. I mean, you know, the $10 a month for everything on my mobile, offline, I mean, that is an incredible value. It's an incredible deal. You know, if you're into music and you were buying a CD every now and then, you know, that, you know, 10 years ago, $10 a month for everything instantly available to you is you know, is the best deal ever. And, you know, I was recently talking about this, how it's very interesting. People pay for Netflix, $10 a month, and they have no problem with that, you know, in the video space. But then when you're talking about music, and, you know, people love music just as much, if not more, than video, for some reason, there's a little bit of a holdup. So from the consumer side, I think that things couldn't be better. And, you know, outside of the $10 a month space, you've got your SoundClouds and your Bandcamps and your all your music blogs and, you know, your artist direct sites. And, you know, from a sort of indie or unsigned artist standpoint, I mean, the access to that has never been greater. And that's some of where the best stuff is actually coming from as well. So, yeah, it's you know, the business is still to be determined. You know, it's not going away. If anything, it's getting better and better. But yes, I agree with you. We're going to look back probably in 5, 10, 20 years, and man, it was the crazy times back then. You know, I'm glad we figured it out now.
Yeah, I mean, so let's kind of go back a little bit. So, I mean, this question is going to sound silly, but I think it's going to be fun to talk about. So, you know, let's say Kyle and I don't know, we had traumatic brain injuries, the two of us. Or we just were like, all this history and all the stuff that we know just got deleted out of our minds. And we're sitting around all night and we're like, let's start a music startup, like a playlist startup or discovery startup. What type of advice would you give us other than like people are insane? Because, right, like people, it's not that hard to find out. I mean, Kyle and I are very close to this, but even an average sort of person who's interested in music and startups can read enough and get enough knowledge to know that, yeah, this probably isn't like go start like a car sharing startup or something, or like a butler startup, like what just run TechCrunch. Like don't do music, but yet tons of people do it. So, let's say you had a kid come to you who was like, I want to do a music startup, a playlist startup, no matter what are you gonna say to them?
Hey guys, did I lose you?
Oh no, we're here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it was dropping out a little bit. I mean, it's look, people are so passionate and excited about music that it's just things are just going to keep getting started and started and started. And I would never sit here and say, "Hey, I've done music for this long and you can't do it." Because if you can look across the industry at every startup, and there's always reasons not to do any startup, but someone new things come about, and even if those new things don't fully succeed, some of the ideas that they bring to the table are part of the interesting future that we're all building together here. So, I take XFM as an example. It's as a business, we did not succeed, but I think a lot of the concepts that we had, around finding of this music, some of the social things that we did, are pieces that really are interesting and belong in a music service, and that's part of that's part of the deal with Rhapsody here. I mean, it's part of the why we were all so excited, because on our own, we couldn't make it, but we did a lot of really cool things, and those really cool things part of Rhapsody and integrated in a company that has a business model and has licensed music and all that kind of stuff, those could be even more exciting. So yeah, I mean, it's you can look across the board at the startups that are out there right now, and there are some. I mean, I love what's going on in the music space, and from the 8 tracks, the radio, the radio. And like as a user, there's amazing, amazing things going on.
So that being said, we'll kind of fast forward to our last question. You are now the VP of product at Rhapsody International. What does that role entail? And in your view, what are the biggest opportunities to improve on Rhapsody's current product?
Absolutely. So, I mean, first of all, I'll say, and I think I said this to the team the first day I got here. It really is a dream come true job for me. Again, I've been in this music space now for many years. Before XFM, even at AOL Music and StreamPad before that, and it's my role here is overseeing all of the product. It's the current product that we have now, which actually is more than just maybe just the one the website or the app that I mean we're on radio product, which is really interesting. It's sort of radio mixed with on demand a bit, and it's for $3.99, so the price point's a little bit better, or a little bit say more affordable for people that aren't ready to go to that $9.99 point yet. I'm overseeing all of that, and then really looking at the future and what ways in which we can improve the current product, and ways in which we could rethink some of the assumptions that have that are have always been here and are in most of the music space right now. So I don't want to get into details around what we're doing, because I think when we do it, it's going to be everyone's going to take notice. But there were things that we did at XFM. That I think can really play a role part in a licensed music app. And I'm not going to say that the space has gotten a little boring because, again, it's really exciting as a user, but you know, there's not much differentiation from the Spotify's to the RDO's to the Beats and whatnot. And everyone has their slight differences and whatnot. But I think that it, you know, there's opportunities to do stuff that is a little bit more interesting, or I'll say a lot more interesting than what's currently out there. And you know, that's really what we're focused on. And you know, I joined here because I, you know, I'll say the executives were very much already thinking that way, and you know, our sort of visions aligned. And then once I got in here and I started meeting the team and stuff, like there's a lot of very hungry people here that have been doing this for a long time, that are absolutely passionate about music and you know, are determined to win. So from that standpoint, you know, it's I am really excited for the for you know, what we're working on, what we're building, you know, and we'll have to see. And I'm sort of, in a way, I'm relieved a bit because I'm not worrying about a lot of the things that I needed to worry about when I, you know, everything from business models to investors to HR and you know, all the things in between. I'm sort of now just, you know, laser focused on product, and you know, that's where I've always wanted to be. You know, it's really exciting.
Well, thank you
Awesome.
so much for coming on the show, Dan. People and talking about, you know, your music startup experience and where things are going at Rhapsody. If people want to connect with you online and check out Rhapsody's latest products, where can they find them?
Sure. So Rhapsody.com, or you know, Rhapsody in the App Store, Google Play, Windows Store. You know, we've got products that are there right now, and you know, give them a shot. They're good. You know, I've been using Rhapsody now for 6 months, and you know, it's a very good experience. And you know, stick with us, and I'd say, you know, we've got some great things coming, and you know, I'm hoping that we can. And at least to our XFM audience, you know, really start to, I guess, beta test or show some things that are sort of the next generation.
And where can people find you?
You could find me on Twitter, Dan Cantor, or dancantor.com, my website, which is in need of a little bit of an overhaul. But yeah, I you know, and you know, it's. I'm available to talk.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
That's all for this episode of The Upward Spiral. Thanks to Hypebot.com for helping to put this podcast out. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at upwardspiralpodcast@gmail.com and be sure to follow us on Twitter at upwardspiralpod. And don't forget to subscribe in iTunes. And if you like the show, please rate us highly and submit a review. Thank you for listening.